Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here on another exciting episode here at Blog Talk Radio. I want to first give thanks to my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning. I also want to thank all of my friends that have been posting and responding to me on Facebook as I've been talking about some things. So I just want to let you know that I do appreciate you. Now, as we start the show today, before we even get started, I want to say some things in regards to 9-1-1 and basically give an acknowledgement to the anniversary of 9-11. And, you know, let's keep those in prayers who've lost loved ones and family members in throughout that traumatic event. I also want to say in regards to 9-1-1, as I said, that 9-1-1 means a lot of different things to individuals. So I'm just basically sharing what 9-1-1 means to me. It was also the anniversary, the 21st anniversary of my goddaughter's father's death. Don't know if they ever found out who did it, but it was definitely a senseless murder that did occur in the city of Compton, which they later tried to say it was behind Tupac stuff, but then they found that he really had nothing to do with that. And that was a very hard time for my goddaughter as she had lost her father. So, and then I also, on a happier note, I want to say happy 14th birthday to my firstborn granddaughter. So she turns 14 today. So that's basically what 9-1-1 means to me. Now, also, I want to say, however, that September is also National Suicide Awareness Month, with 9-10 being the day of recognition. Now, with all that's going on in the world, and we need to be aware and we need to also recognize the warning signs of if a person is experiencing symptoms or thoughts or having suicidal ideation, which I'm going to explain a lot of these things to you and what they actually mean in the amount of time that we have on the air. But I do want to say I've been watching the news. I don't know what really happened in Florida. I know that the Hurricane Irma is going through Florida still and will be hitting other states in regards to Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee, which I do have family and friends that do live in those areas. And I know my cousin from Florida, she did evacuate. I know she went to I want you to say she went to Georgia. So Shawande, just make sure you stay safe. So let's get the show started as we talk about National Suicide Awareness Day and talk about suicide prevention and interventions. So let me join my first caller on the air. Hi, this is Jeanette. Hey, Jeanette. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
Hey, Jeanette, this is Nick. I'm anxious to hear about some of those.
I'm glad you called. I'm glad you on because I did want to share the services that you provide too, because it's definitely a meaningful service that a lot of people are not aware of, especially when we start talking about suicide and things of that nature. Now, I want to first start off by saying that we know we are going to die. We know that. But when a person takes their own life, that's taking it to a whole nother level. And like I said earlier, I know that a lot of us, a lot of individuals are going through stressful times, stressful events. They may be having relationship problems. They may be having financial problems, whether it's dealing with the flood, whether it's a whole lot of things that individuals may be going through. So I do want to say that when we start talking about just the thoughts of suicide, what constitutes whether a person is actually just talking or whether they actually plan on doing it? Because sometimes we may not take people seriously. And I can truly say, because even in my own family, we've had individuals that have taken their own lives, and it was tragic. And I remember when my godbrother did what he did, and I talked about that on another show that I did before in regards to him committing suicide. And not only he did a suicide homicide, but I was one of the people that spoke with him earlier that day. And it was sad because I didn't really pay attention to really what he was telling me. And my thing was with him, as long as it doesn't happen to you, I'm not going to worry about it. And only to learn that same night that he killed his wife and killed himself. And I want to say that his kids are doing very great. And if you follow me on Facebook, you can check out Graham's music, because I noticed that one of his videos he did in front of the home of where the tragic incident took place in regards to when he lost both of his parents. Now, by definition, with suicide, as we know, suicide is taking your own life, is a tragic reaction to a stressful situation. Because I never heard a person just committing suicide without being stressed. And there's other things that can be involved. Now, all the more tragic because suicide can be prevented. So that's one thing we have to keep in mind, that suicide is preventable. Now, whether you're considering suicide or know someone who feels suicidal, learning suicide warning signs and how to reach out immediately to help the individual, to whether it's just listening to them, guiding them to the right direction, you have no idea how that may save a life, including may save your own life. So it may seem that there's no way to solve problems and that suicide sometimes is the only way to end the pain. But I remember being I was a social worker. And I remember I had a kid one time, and I was really concerned about this kid. And this kid told me that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And that made a whole lot of sense to me, and that let me know that that child was going to be okay. Now, if you want to call in on the show today, you can call in at 516-387-1914 as we talk about this topic. And again, if you think that you may attempt suicide, please get some help now, because like I said, it is preventable. I'm going to be reiterating this throughout the show, but you can call 911 or your local emergency number immediately, or you can call a suicide hotline number in the United States, which is 800-273-TALK or 800-273-8255. And there's also a number where if you don't want to talk because you really don't want to hear what somebody have to say, and some individuals like texting things, there's also a text number that you can use by texting NAMI to 741-741, because some individuals find it better to write things out and express themselves in writing versus talking to someone on the phone. So, Nick, thank you for joining me today. And tell me why you wanted to join in on this topic. Why is this topic very dear to you? What do you want to share with the listeners?
Well, the topic itself is not dear to me. I am just a curious person, and I just want to keep up with anything that that I could use to enhance my life and the people around me. So I listen every week just to find that out.
Thank you. And I'm really grateful that you came into my life. And it's interesting how I've been meeting so many different people. I was on the phone the other day. I received a phone call, and Lord knows I got 99 emails to read and freaking 100 phone calls to return and all this other stuff. But one day I just answered the phone, and I had an attorney on the phone with me. And this attorney, basically, I'm going to follow up with her. She told me that she's in the L.A. area, and she works with individuals that are facing life sentencing. So I'm going to have her on the air pretty soon once I connect with her, because a lot of times we talk about committing suicide or having an ideation and a thought. Can you imagine being arrested or convicted of a crime you didn't commit and knowing you have to spend the rest of your life in jail? Because individuals don't realize that some individuals, they say, commit suicide in jail. Some may have not. Because there were individuals that they said committed suicide that didn't. So it kind of goes both ways. But I want to make it a point for people to realize that when we talk about suicide, it affects individuals from all walks of life. I remember reading an article, and it saddened me, where a kid was in school, and he was 8 years old, and he was being bullied. And that kid being bullied could not take it anymore, and he went home and he took his own life at 8. So a lot of parents, you know, I want you to pay attention to your kids, you know the warning signs, engage in this dialogue with your children to make sure that they're not feeling or in that dark, dark space. Because like I said, it's happening to children. It's happening to teenagers. It's happening to young adults. It's happening to individuals that are married, divorced. There's a lot of things going on. And whether they are, you know, separated, seniors. So it's something that we really, really, like I said, we really need to pay attention to. Now, Nick, one of the things that I said earlier was I was talking about just a thought. To where sometimes individuals may have this, you know, feeling sad, feeling depressed. And I want to say that when a person is experiencing depression or when individuals are under a great deal of stress, suicidality is also at its highest peak. Now, I said something about the thoughts before, but I also want individuals to know that when we talk about suicidal ideation, ideation is also known as the thoughts. And it's the thinking about or an unusual preoccupation with suicide. Now, the range of suicidal ideation varies greatly from those thoughts to extensive thoughts to detailed planning and sometimes even role playing. You know, I remember one time one of my cousins had called and I learned that her daughter had tried to hang herself in a garage. And she found the rope in the garage. She found, you know, items that was just didn't make sense. But those are things, like I said, you got to pay attention to. In addition to not only that, like I said, the role playing, standing on a chair with a noose. And sometimes incomplete attempts. Now, those attempts, which may be deliberately constructed to not complete or to be discovered, or they may be fully intended to result in death. But the individual, they may survive, and sometimes they may not. But I want to say that most people who have suicidal thoughts do not go on to make such suicide attempts. But suicidal thoughts are considered a risk factor. Now, they go on to say that I want to say that this is not something that just happened only in the United States, because I do have listeners that listen to my shows in other countries, over in Africa. Found that people are even listening in Russia. They listen in Mexico. So they're listening in a lot of different places. So I don't want an individual to just think that it's something that just happened over here in the United States, because it happens all over the world when we start talking about the statistics as it relates to individuals committing suicide. But I do want to say, and I have posted it on my Facebook, because some of the numbers that I had over like 800 and something thousand individuals a day are either a survivor or perhaps maybe have been, you know, attempt suicide or things of that nature. So I don't want to go into the number games, because the numbers can be either skewed, and it depends on where a lot of those numbers are basically coming from, because there's a lot of different organizations that actually report those numbers. But like one of the main thing is, if you love someone or if you lost someone, let's pay attention, because like I said, suicidality do not discriminate. And one of the things I was just mentioning is the 800,000 people. It came from the WHO Association, and they indicated that across the world, 800,000 individuals die of suicide every year, and at least 65,000 people attempt suicide, as several others think about it. And as I mentioned earlier, September is National Awareness Month, and many have been affected. So if individuals are struggling with this, like I said, please give me a call at 516-387-1914. Now, you know, Nick, I want to share a story with you. And this happened in my life, and it was really interesting because I am a licensed therapist. I'm the owner of the Center for the Treatment of Addiction located in Orange County with offices in Fullerton, Garden Grove, and Huntington Beach. I'm also the owner of J.A. Precious, located in Oceanside, California, and I also work out of another office in the city of Marietta, so Riverside County. So I'm all over the place. But, Nick, I remember one time when I first got into this field, because I was very nosy, every time they would call me, I would always try to take the phone calls. If they call me with a blocked number or to hang up on my phone in my face, I'd always call them back. Because if I ain't got nothing to do, like I tell people all the time, I like to talk. So one day, Nick, I received this phone call, and I was talking to this gentleman. And I was talking to this gentleman for 3 hours on the phone. And during our conversation, I noticed that he was saying some things to me. Nick, you got to turn your background noise. I can hear phone ringing. But during this conversation, he was talking about how low he was, how depressed he was, and he had also been struggling with drug addiction. So I stayed on the phone, listened to this man, talking to this man, and I'm a type of person, I may remember your story, but I may not remember your name. And several weeks later, I was doing a group in Fullerton, and I was doing a check-in period. And when I asked the man what brought him into the program, he indicated that he had been referred by the courts to do Prop 36, and he also shared with me, and he thanked me because he told me and reminded me that I had a conversation with him for 3 hours, and it was the conversation that we had which made him change his mind, because he was at the lowest of his lowest and wanted to kill himself. And it was the fact that I made him laugh and our conversation, which one, made him want to come to my program. Two, he wanted to personally thank me enough for caring, yet I didn't even know who he was. Now, Nick, have you ever, what has been your experience with this topic? Like I said, I know you said that it's not very, you know, dear to your heart, but have you ever had any friends or any family members in your family that may have ever contemplated suicide? Okay, Nick hung up. So I guess not. Okay, so getting back to it, like I said, I wanted to ask Nick a question, but Nick done left me, so he done just abandoned me right now, but that's okay. So getting back to what I was saying in regards to suicidal ideation after I just shared that story of the young man that I had spoken with, but suicide ideation, like I said, is generally associated with depression and other mood disorders. However, it may have some association also with other mental disorders, life events, and family events, all of which may increase the risk of suicidal ideation. For example, many individuals with borderline personality disorders, for individuals that may not know what borderline personality disorders are, I call it when they see things either black or white. And individuals with borderline personality disorders also have difficulties with relationships, which is another thing. Now, they found that individuals with borderline personality disorders, many of them have attempted suicide, with an average patient having at least 3 to 4 attempts. And currently, there is a number of treatment options for those experiencing suicidal ideation. So again, I want you to reach out to someone, and I want you to get some help. Now, I want to share some of the signs and the symptoms, because a lot of times individuals may not be aware of what they are. Now, in regards to the suicidal ideation, it has a straightforward definition, like suicidal thoughts, but there are some other related signs and symptoms. Some symptoms are what's called comorbid conditions and may include some of the things like if you notice a person is having unintentional weight loss, because, you know, they're kind of depressed, they're not eating, they may be having feelings of feeling helpless, feeling alone, excessive fatigue, low self-esteem, presence of consistent mania, sometimes excessively talkative. And sometimes you may see an intent on previous dormant goals, meaning that they may have goals before and they're like, oh, no, that's okay. And one of the things to look for when you're talking about these symptoms and signs is when an individual has been experiencing a great deal of depression, and then all of a sudden they start saying, life is great, I got a plan, I'm going to do this. So when you start seeing that drastic change in mood, that is really a red flag that they got a plan. Something just ain't right. So those are some of the things that you need to look for, like I said, when you start talking about some of the warning signs. And again, if you want to call in, You can call in at 516-387-1914. Because, like I said, I miss warning signs on individuals, and other individuals may have missed warning signs too. So we need to know, what are the warning signs? Is a person is if they are at risk. Now, I had asked you a question, and let me see, back on here on both lines. Give me a second. Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Question. Hey,
I had lost
question.
You. Now you're on two lines. But I asked you a question, and before you, what was you going to say?
I have a, yeah, I'm here, and I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do we seek, in the case of an adult, what point do we actually seek help to some psychologist or something?
You need to seek help immediately. Sometimes you may not. It may not be to a psychologist. A psychologist basically do psychological testing mostly. They may do therapy, but they do more testing. So they can test to see if you are suffering from depression or any other type of mental illness or mood disorder or things of that nature. A psychiatrist is one that administers psychotropic medication. So they're the one that can give you medications to treat the symptoms of depression, anxiety, or any mood disorder or psychiatric illness or things of that nature. You can also, you know, go see a therapist. I always tell individuals, a pill is not going to fix your problem. A lot of times individuals think, well, if I go see a psychiatrist and they give me some psych meds, everything is going to be great. That's not always true, because individuals also have to realize that some of the warning signs on their medication, even if it's high blood pressure medication, whatever the case may be, some things may change your mood, and some things can make you still have, or like Zoloft or Paxil. Some of those things can also make you have preoccupation with suicidal thoughts. So if you start feeling that way, it's best to get help immediately. So I wouldn't say you just automatically got to call your psychiatrist or psychologist, because most individuals struggle with those steps. And I can truly say, being a therapist myself, sometimes calling a psychologist, you might not be able to get an appointment for 30 days. And anything can happen during that time frame. So you can call a crisis hotline. You can call a family member. You can call a trusted friend. So that's why I like that you can call individuals, because there's a difference also. Even call somebody calling the police, they may have to do what's called a mental health evaluation to determine if you are 5150, meaning a danger to yourself or a danger to other people. So in those cases, individuals get help immediately. Now, did that answer your question?
Well, my question was directed to an adult. If you mm-hmm. notice these signs from an adult, which I don't know if they have to agree to seeing somebody, but at what point do we try to call somebody in to talk to this adult?
Immediately. Is what I'm saying. Your question was calling a psychologist. A psychologist, like I indicated, do psychological testing. You call a psychologist, you may not get an appointment immediately. You call your psychiatrist, you may not get in immediately. So you do not hesitate to call your local suicide hotline immediately. So you call 1-800-784-2433, or you can call 800-273-TALK. So you don't wait to say, get in and go see your doctor, because you got to find out if they have a plan, you know, if they have access. It's just like if a person say, you know what, when I go home tonight, I'm going to blow my brains out. Now, if you know that person have guns at home, there is a high probability of them doing that. So you don't want to play with that, because you may miss something. So you call again immediately. So what happens is, even if they don't want to get the help, sometimes that's why they do 5150, meaning they are a danger. They have what's called the PET team. You can call them. You can, like I said, if you call 211, 411, they will advise you on what to do, whether it's for yourself or for someone else. Okay? So I understand probably where you're going with it being an adult. An adult may not want the help. I get that. But if a person is a danger to themselves, somebody's still got to help them. Now, the best way to minimize the risk of suicide is to know the risk factors, like I said earlier, and recognize the warning signs of suicide. And again, take these signs seriously, because a lot of times we think, oh, it ain't no big deal. Oh, they'll get over it. But there are some risk factors. And like I said, risk factors for suicide may vary by age, gender, and ethnic group. And risk factors often occur in combination. Because over 90% of people who die by suicide have clinical depression. Depression and stress. You want to know, any depression, any mental health illnesses, and what are their stressors? Also, many times people who die by suicide, they have an alcohol or substance abuse problem. That plays a big factor in it too. Because if you're already depressed, drinking is not going to do nothing but make you more depressed. But yet many individuals run to alcohol to try to soothe their pain when it actually makes matters worse, and so does other drugs. Now, often individuals, like I said, they can have a combination of other mental disorders, meaning that it don't have to be depression. It could be a person that's schizophrenic. They're tired of it. I remember when HIV was on the rise, where a lot of individuals, when they were given a diagnosis that they were HIV positive, many individuals was ready to give up on life, and they were also committing suicide. I have another story I want to share. I remember when I was working for the County of Orange, and a person came into my office, and his face was disfigured. And I was looking at him like, okay, I don't know what this is about, but again, me being nosy, I wanted to know. The man, basically, during a conversation, I learned it. You know, probably was going through some things. But to make a long story short with this individual, he attempted suicide and tried to jump off the overpass of the freeway because he wanted to actually die. Problem was, it wasn't his time to go. So as he jumped off the freeway, instead of landing in traffic, the wind kind of shifted him over to the dirt, and he broke every bone in his body, including his face. So sometimes you may be feeling like you want to die, but if God is not ready for you and it is not your time to go, it is not your time to go, no matter what you do. But then I have another young lady who was a foster kid. She actually was successful and went on the freeway overpass on the 60 freeway in Moreno Valley and jumped off the freeway, even though somebody tried to talk her down. And she was under the influence also of a controlled substance. Now, here are some risk factors for suicide. They include one or more prior suicide attempts. So if a person has a history of suicide attempts, please listen. If there's a family history of other mental disorders and substance abuse, family history of suicide, family violence, physical or sexual abuse, keeping firearms in the home, chronic illnesses, including chronic pain, incarceration, or exposure to suicidal behaviors. Now, the warning signs that someone may be thinking or planning to commit suicide include always talking or thinking about death, clinical depression, deep sadness, loss of interest, trouble sleeping, and eating things get worse, having death wish, losing interest in things, making comments about being hopeless, helpless, or worthless, putting affairs in order and tying up loose ends. And I want to say we kind of missed that with my mother. Even though she had breast cancer and passed away in 2008, one of the things that we missed was she had called people, was giving stuff away, and it really had nothing to do much with her cancer. It had something to do with her plan, because my mother also suffered from depression, and that was her way of doing things. As she indicated, you know, I'm going to, you guys are going to miss me, and, you know, people do what they do. So, like I said, putting affairs in order, tying up loose ends, and saying things like, it would be better if I wasn't here, I'm out, I'm tired, I can't take it anymore, I just want to go to sleep, or, excuse my language, when people get a case of the fuck it. So those are some of the things. Or also talking about suicide or killing someone else, or and visiting or calling people to say goodbye. When individuals start calling you to say goodbye, then you know something is wrong. So be especially concerned if you see some of these things, because between 20 to 50% of people who commit suicide, like they indicate, have had previous attempts. Now, when we start talking about some of the things, I don't know why people want to call me knowing that I am on the radio. They do this to me all the time. So it kind of goes back to answering your question, Nick, and you wanted to know, what should I do if a person is at risk or shows the warning signs? So I'm going to say, if someone you know appears to be depressed and is contemplating suicide, like I mentioned earlier, take it seriously. Listen to what they're saying. Take an initiative to ask that person what he or she is planning. But do not attempt to argue with him or her out of committing suicide. Rather, let the person know that you care and understand you are listening. Avoid statements like, you have so much more to live for, because they don't want to hear that. And ask the person if they have sought medical or mental professional help, or if they're currently being treated by a mental health professional. I want to say, Nick, it was interesting. One time my son called me, and I think I shared it on the air before, because people know that know me, my son get on my last nerve, because boy, the things he do. I think sometimes he be wanting to do a suicide by mom, because, you know, we had the suicide by cops and all that other mess. But he called me one time and told me, he said, I missed his phone call, and I called him back a couple of days later. He said, well, I called you because I was going to commit suicide. I said, oh, for real? He said, yeah. I said, okay. I said, so you got any money to pay for it? For you, how you going to be buried? Well, you going to pay for it. I said, no, I'm not. I said, I'm going to cash in my insurance policy, and I'm going to the casino. And I was talking to him because I got so sick of him with his, you know, antics of how he do things when he gets and slips into those modes. So I told him, I said, well, thank you for letting me know, but I could truly say the sucker's still alive. But I have tried to get him to go get some help, but he won't go get no help either. So do you have any other questions before I go on with this, Nick? Any other questions?
No, Jeanette, I don't have any more. Thank you very much.
Okay. So, again, if you want to call in, if you want to share any stories that you may have, or you want to know how can you, what else can you do besides listening? Because I know sometimes individuals say, well, I don't want to hear it. Or, you know, what are some of the triggers, or what would make a person want to, you know, take their own lives? And I remember one time a teacher, I was in school, and the teacher told us to close our eyes and think of a time when we were at our lowest point in life and how we wanted to just end our life. And I didn't close my eyes, and the teacher started looking at me. And when the teacher started looking at me, she told me, you know, she wanted to talk to me because she felt I didn't participate in the assignment. And I told her, I said, I did. So when she asked me, well, so you mean that you never thought about committing suicide? I looked at the woman, I said, no. I said, I'm not suicidal, I'm homicidal. I said, I don't believe in killing myself. I believe in killing somebody who make me mad. So what am I killing myself for? I want to live. But that was because, I want to say, because of my upbringing. It's because of my thought process. I mean, personally, I just never thought about it, but I'm not going to minimize it, is basically what I meant in regards to that. Because, you know, when we talk about relationships and trying to understand that, and even being a therapist, Nick, I could say that I've had individuals come and tell me, well, my boyfriend broke up with me, my girlfriend broke up with me, and I just want to kill myself. And because I couldn't even really, you know, be like connecting with that, I would say, well, if you kill yourself, what if they don't come to your funeral? You might be doing them a favor. And they would look at me like, I never thought about that. And I would tell them, you know, that is considered more emotional abuse, because just because you're feeling this way, you're trying to punish that person and make them pay for your pain. But it doesn't mean that just because you kill yourself, that they may not just go on with their life and find somebody else. And all you did was miss out on things that you may have been able to accomplish in your life with or without them. And I, one of the things I do as a therapist is I would just try to get them to see things a little differently, because I want to give you, the listeners, some information also about some of just the common misconceptions about suicide. And I want to say that these are myths, and I'm going to tell you basically what the facts are. Now, when we talk about the myth, one of the myths is that people who talk about suicide won't really do it. And a lot of times, and I want to say I was guilty of that when it came to my son, because I'm not going to say he go do it or won't do it, because I really don't know. Like I tell him, life and death is in the power of the tongue. You have to choose life. And if that's what you choose to do, that's on you. But by that same token, the fact is almost everyone who attempts suicide has given some clue or warning. Don't ignore even indirect references to death or suicide. Statements like, you'll be sorry when I'm gone, or I can't see any way out, or no matter how casual or jokingly said, may indicate serious suicidal feelings. So to think that a person really won't do it, like I said, you really don't want to play with that. Another myth. Anyone who tries to kill himself or herself must be crazy. That is a myth, because most suicidal people are not psychotic or insane. They must be upset, grief-stricken, depressed, despairing, but extremely distressed and emotional pain are not necessarily signs of mental illnesses. You know, Nick, there were times I remember when the stock market crashed and, you know, individuals were afraid of becoming homeless, and they took their lives because they didn't know what else to do. Even in, you know, depending on what kind of job you have, people in the military, they are at risk of committing suicide. Police officers are at risk of committing suicide. So it's not that the person is crazy. They just feel sometimes there's no way out. Another myth. If a person is determined to kill himself or herself, nothing is going to stop them. That is a myth, because the fact is, even the most severely depressed person has mixed feelings about death, wavering until the very last moment between wanting to die and wanting to live. Meaning, most suicidal people, they may not really want to die. They want the pain to stop. The impulse to end it all, however, overpowering, does not last forever. So even though you want the pain to stop, get some help. Another myth. People who die by suicide are people who were unwilling to seek help. That is a myth, because the fact is, studies of suicide victims have shown that more than half had sought medical help within 6 months prior to their death. Another myth, talking about suicide may give someone the idea. Now, especially, you know, when you talk to kids, and as a therapist, when I hear a child talking about committing suicide, I want to know where they got that language from. I want to know, you know, because they watch things on TV, they watch cartoons, and sometimes they may see that the cartoon character may die and come back. Or, you know, watching scary movies and things of that nature. So sometimes they may not have a true understanding of what death really means. So they may not know the language, but they still may be going through something. Sometimes with children, you may see things in regard to their parents divorcing or separating. You may see, when you see signs and symptoms of child abuse, whether it is sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, physical. Those are some of the red flags and warning signs that you may see in children that commit suicide. And like I said, teens, you see more of the breakup relationships. And some elder adults, sometimes you see more, you know, either the, I want to say, not only just in seniors, but also in a lot of individuals, but the death of a loved one. You know, their parents may have passed away and they feel like they want to die, or their husband or their boyfriends may, or girlfriends may pass away. And those are, like I said, some of the red signs that you may see in regards to, and sometimes even when you see cheating and infidelity. So those are some of the things and signs that you may see. So I want to give the listeners, you guys, some information on tips meaning suicide prevention tips, because there's an organization, one of the organizations is called You Matter. So anytime you feel like I'm not important, no money loves me, you never know that, and you know, everybody has a gift, everybody has a talent, and we all mean something to someone. And it's best to mean something to yourself. But here's some suicide tips, meaning speak up if you're worried. If you spot the warning signs to someone you care about, you may wonder if it's a good idea to say something or say anything. What if you're wrong? What if that person is angry or become defensive? In such situation, it's natural to feel uncomfortable or be afraid, because sometimes individuals will feel, I don't know what to do. So it's best if I say nothing. But in such situations, like I said, that's normal. But anyone who talks about suicide or shows other warning signs needs immediate help. The sooner the better. So when you're talking to a person about suicide, whether talking to a friend, a family member about their suicidal thoughts and feelings, it can be extremely difficult for anyone. I remember being a teenager and a young adult, and my mother, when she'd break up with her relationships, I can't forget one time she told me she wanted to jump in front of a train. I got so mad, I wanted to look at her. I was like, I'll push you in front of that train if you don't get it together. But the thing is, even though it seems difficult, you may be unsure whether someone is really suicidal. So the best way to find out is really to ask. If you can't make a person suicidal by showing that you care, in fact, giving a suicidal person the opportunity to express their feelings can provide relief from the loneliness, the pent-up negative feelings, and may prevent a suicidal attempt. So I want to give you some information in regards to ways to start the conversation. It can go like this. You know, I've been feeling concerned about you lately. Or, recently I noticed some differences in you and wondered how you're doing. Or, I wanted to check in with you because you haven't seen yourself lately. Those are what you call some of the open-ended, you know, just statements that you're making to get engaged in a dialogue for them to answer you. And also, listen. So those are ways to start the conversation. Then you can ask questions like, have you thought about getting some help? Or, how can I best support you right now? And, did something happen that made you start feeling this way? Or when did you begin feeling like this? Because when you start asking those questions, it can kind of lead you to the who, what, when, where, and how, which kind of put the stories together. You can also say things that may help, like, you're not alone in this. I'm here for you. Or you may not believe it now, but the way you're feeling will change. And I may not be able to understand exactly how you feel, but I care about you and I want to help. And I'm going to say, as a therapist, that's my statement right there, because I'm not going to say I understand exactly how they feel, because I really don't. But I do my best to help. And, you know, some of the things I do, I use humor. Another thing that I do is I use music. Because one of the things that I found, Nick, is gospel music. I love gospel music. You know, some of the songs like This Too Shall Pass, some of Yolanda Adams songs, some of Kirk Franklin's music. I just like listening to gospel music, because sometimes that can take you to a whole nother place and space. And also, some of the things that you could say that may help is, when you want to give up, tell yourself that you can hold off. If you can just hold off for just one more day, one more hour, one more minute, however you can manage. Now, somebody sent me some information, and I saw some stuff when I was on Facebook, and I saw some things on LinkedIn and some information that was texting me, and I hate to say my phone is about to go dead, so I can't really read a whole lot of stuff, but I want to first read one of the text messages that someone sent me last night. And when he sent it to me, it was a statement. Let me open it up. Okay. Now I can't even. Okay, here it is. It says, I promise you, these storms are only trying to wash you clean. And when I questioned him about where, you know, this came from, he said that I might wanted to use that. He said it came from someone also had said Brandon Marshall, who was a football player. He said that he followed this individual, and he also started a project because he suffered from mental illnesses. And basically he does a lot of information put out there in regards to suicide prevention also. And when I was going back and forth with him last night, I told him I was also watching the Miss America pageant. And I believe it was Miss Tennessee. It was one of them. So please forgive me if it was the wrong person or the wrong state. But one of the ladies that was in the top 15, she had indicated that part of what made her kind of do what she wanted to do was that her father had an addiction to opiates and he had also committed suicide. So, I mean, it was just interesting just to hear, you know, football players, some football players that actually committed suicide, how the lady who was basically, you know, running for Miss America, how she had lost her father to suicide. And she shared that on national television. Because a lot of times what happens is individuals try to live in secret. They live in shame. And that's something that we have to basically, we have to do away with because we don't need to be ashamed. Now, I want to give you guys some more information. We have 13 minutes left on the show. Again, if you want to call in, the number to call is 516-387-1914. Now, when talking to a suicidal individual, be yourself. A lot of times individuals maybe get scared and they start trying to be phony or they start trying to give them false hopes or, you know, making up stuff that's not true. Be authentic. Let the person know you care. Let them know that they're not alone because the right words are often unimportant because if you are concerned, your voice and manner will show it. They will know. So, again, be yourself. Listen. Let the suicidal person unload despair. Let them ventilate their anger. No matter how negative the conversation seems, the fact that it exists is a positive sign. So you basically want to listen to let them out, let it out. You know, one of my friends, Dr. Lisa Romaine, she always say, do you want me to listen or you want me to do something about it? Because sometimes they may not want you to fix it. They want you to just listen. But if they need resources, and then you try to see what resources you can find. Like I said, 211, finding out if they have insurance. There are places and clinics that will accept individuals that don't have insurance. But I want to say the crisis hotline is somebody that they will listen. Be sympathetic, meaning non-judgmental. Be patient. Be calm. Be accepting. Your friend or your family member is doing the right thing by talking about his or her feelings. So actually be sympathetic. Offer hope. Reassure the person that help is available and let the suicidal feelings, let them know that they're temporary. Let the person know that his or her life is important to you. Take the person seriously. Now, a lot of times people try to tell us what to do, but we also have to know what not to do. One of the things and one of the biggest issues that individuals have is they want to argue with the suicidal person. That can sometimes make a suicide turn into a homicide to start pissing the person off. So don't argue with the person. Avoid saying things like you have so much to live for, or your suicide will hurt your family, or look on the bright side. What do you think about that, Nick, in regards to just some of them comments? Nick ain't saying nothing again. Another thing you don't want to do, you don't want to act shocked, meaning lecture on the value of life or say that suicide is wrong. That's another thing that we find that becomes an issue because individuals have their own spiritual belief in regards to suicide. Some people used to say that suicide is a guaranteed way to go to hell. I mean, I tell people I don't have a heaven or hell to put you in, so I don't know. But by that same token, is you don't want to start talking about religious beliefs and principles and things of that nature because that really don't help. And so we want to, you know, leave that part alone. Another thing we don't want to do is promise confidentiality. Refuse to be sworn to secrecy because a life that is at stake, and you also may need to speak to a mental health professional in order to keep the suicidal person safe. If you promise to keep your discussion secret, you may have to break your own word, because I tell individuals, even when I'm doing therapy, I'm a mandated reporter, that what you say is confidential. However, there are exceptions to confidentiality. Confidentiality, the exceptions include child abuse, dependent adult abuse, elder abuse, suicidality, and a homicide, meaning I have a legal and ethical duty to do something. Another thing you also don't want to do is you do not want to tell them or offer ways to fix their problem. They don't want you to fix their problems or give advice or make them feel like they have to justify their suicidal feelings. It is not always about how bad the problem, but how badly it's hurting them. So you could talk about their pain, but don't talk about ways that you can fix it. And also, don't blame yourself. A lot of times what happens is individuals, if the person either attempts suicide or if they follow through and they actually were successful with it, they may try to blame themselves, because you can't fix somebody else's depression. You can't fix your loved one's happiness or lack thereof. It is not your responsibility. I always tell individuals that no one can make you happy, no one can make you sad. All they can do is add to it or take away from it or compliment it. Now, again, there are levels of suicide risks, because individuals want to know the severity. Low. The risk can be low, meaning the individual may be having some thoughts, but no suicide plan. They may say that they actually don't want to attempt suicide, so it's kind of low. It can be moderate, meaning the suicidal thoughts are there. They're vague. There's a plan, but the plan isn't very lethal. Or they, let's say he or she want to attempt suicide, and it's high. Meaning the high is suicidal thoughts are there. There is a specific plan that is highly lethal. Say he or she basically named something and maybe won't. And it's severe when the suicidal thoughts are there, specific plan that is highly. So if a suicidal tip seems imminent, like I said, call your local crisis center, dial 911. You can also take the person to an emergency room. Some of the things you may want to do is remove guns, drugs, knives, or other potential lethal objects from the vicinity, but do not underestimate the circumstance or leave the suicidal person alone, because sometimes that's a problem. And again, get professional help, follow up on treatment, be proactive, encourage positive lifestyle changes, and make a safety plan. Now, I had Nick on the phone, and I don't know where Nick went.
I'm still here. I'm just trying to multitask for a slight minute.
No problem. Nick, I want you to share basically what you do, because a lot of times, and it's sad that, you know, even in our culture as African Americans, you know, you cannot stop someone from taking their lives. And, you know, people are going to die. But the sad thing that I see, especially with our people in regards to minority, is we are underinsured. We lack the resources to either, you know, have burial insurance or life insurance. And even in my field as a therapist, I've had individuals come to me and I straight out ask them, you got some insurance? Or if the parents come to me and the kid is at risk, either on drugs or have a history of suicide attempts, I want to know, do you have insurance on your kids or your young adult? And some people get offended by that. And it's not my intention to offend them, but it's kind of like what I told my son. I'm not going to be standing on the side of the freeway doing no car wash to pay for your funeral. So I want you to share about what you do. And again, if you don't have insurance, please get you some life insurance. You can call Globe Life, Physician Life. You can go online. You can go through AARP, which is what I've learned. You can go to AAA. There's a lot of places that have life where you can purchase life insurance. You can also buy burial insurance. And I'm not being a hypocrite, because I can say my funeral is paid for. I paid for four. So what is it that you do? And so I want you to share that with the listeners.
Okay. What I do is I sell caskets and urns, that's burial caskets and urns. I sell them wholesale to the public. That's all.
Okay.
I'm That's the only part of the funeral industry that I'm in. The name of my company is Savon Caskets and Urns. I sell caskets in all of the 50 United States, and I deliver directly to the funeral home.
Okay. Now, if a person wants to get in touch with you, because like I said, caskets are expensive. I remember when I was looking at some caskets, I mean, I saw Michael Jackson's casket and I saw Whitney Houston's casket, and them caskets, them gold caskets cost about 50 grand. I saw a white one called Heavenly Angel. I thought that was kind of cute. And I saw platinum casket, you know, and caskets can be very expensive and funeral costs can be very expensive too. So how would they contact you if they have a loved one and they need to purchase a casket, even though I know you said that you also deliver to the funeral homes? Because, you know, I mean, one time I went to my godbrother's house, he opened up his garage and he has caskets in the garage. I said, good Lord, what you doing with caskets in your garage? You know, so basically, what number or how could they contact you?
The number is area code 206. 390-3797. I have a Facebook page, SavonCaskets.com. I have a website, SavonCaskets.com.
Okay. Well, I definitely, like I said, appreciate you being a very loyal listener and all of your support that you and your insight and your input that you've been giving me, Guards Radio Show. It is greatly appreciated. And I hope that the listeners basically were able to take some of the information that I said to Clark, because again, the month of September is National Suicide Awareness and Prevention Month. And like I said, many of us have been affected by this in our lives. Some individuals have had the thoughts and the ideations themselves. Sometimes we see it on the work at the workplace. Sometimes you could just see, you know, people walking down the street, homeless individuals. And people don't realize that an act of kindness can go just a long way. Just by letting someone know, I appreciate you. You are loved. You are valued. You know, like I said, I was posting on Facebook about me needing to lose some weight. And it's interesting because people are like, well, I just saw you and you look good. And I'm like, you know, I need to get this weight off of me. So, but I ain't trying to commit suicide. That I ain't going to do. But I might. I don't know about homicide if I get hungry. So remember, suicide is preventable. If we work together, we can stop the suffering in silence. So with this month, let's raise awareness to basically save lives. And that basically came from an organization, which is AFSP.org. Because there are several organizations, there's information you can find on Facebook. Even on my Facebook link, I posted something with the radio station 106 FM. They did some clips in regards to a young teenager was talking about how she missed the warning signs of her sister that was suicidal and wind up taking her life after her boyfriend. She lost her boyfriend. I was watching 2020, I believe it was on Friday, and they had a suicide by text where a young lady had talked about having her boyfriend. It was happening in 2014 where the young lady kept telling the young man to commit suicide. So teen suicide is on the rise. So let's also listen to our young folks and our kids, and let's pay attention to our seniors, because again, suicidality is preventable. So next week, I want you to join me. I had a lot of topics I want to talk about, but I want to talk about teens and marijuana use. And the reason why I want to talk about marijuana use is because when we start talking about drugs and alcohol and addiction and things of that nature, there's a high risk of teens that are smoking marijuana, and a lot of parents don't know what to do. They don't know whether to support the youth or whether to advocate against the youth. So I want to help and put some information out there. So if you think it's okay for your child or your teenager to smoke marijuana, email me at jabneylmft@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter or on Facebook, because I want to educate the teens. I want to educate the parents, because sometimes you may be opening up a doorway that may lead to a lot of self-destruction, because you want to make your kid happy. You want to be a cool mom. But I want to address teens and marijuana use. So talk to you guys next week here at Precious Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. So let me go get my battery charger. I'm in my charger. So if you try to call me, you call me now because I got 7% left on my phone. Till then, thank you. Take care. Bye, Nick.
Bye-bye.